I think the recording broke. The battery on the machine broke. Boaz had promised Ruth that he would do all that she asked of him. But what would his reaction have been if she had asked him to marry her? She could not have possibly contemplated marrying anyone else after she had put herself into such an embarrassing position by lying next to him. He could hardly have refused her as he had promised to accede to her request. I mean, he's got to say yes. Faced with this predicament, he said, stay the night. What he means to say by stay the night is it's true that I've promised you to do as you asked, and I realise that I might be committing myself to marriage, since this is obviously your intention in coming here tonight. I get the idea that the only reason you've come here tonight is for me to redeem you and to marry you. But don't give up. We're going to need more time. I'll be in a much better position tomorrow to grant your request, because I'm going to arrange for Tive to lose all interest in you. If I say, will you marry me right now, and you say yes, and he produces a ring or something like that, and she's engaged, they've got a big problem with Tive. Because if Tive wants her, he'll have good right to say, break off the engagement and give her to me. And there's nothing Boaz can really do about that. Because Tive will say, you never gave me first dibs. So he says, look, stay the night. I can't just acquiesce to marry you now. That doesn't mean you should worry. What it means is I need more time to sort out the legal problem of Tive. Tive is presenting a problem here. And I have to deal with it, otherwise we can't get engaged. Now, Boaz knew the kind of person Tive was, and he knew that Tive would want the field. But he knew that he wouldn't want Ruth. So he planned to offer him the choice of taking both or nothing, which technically is not necessarily true. Tive could have said, I'll just take Ruth, or I'll just take the field. It was Boaz that tied her to the field. That was the plan. That's why he said, stay the night. And in the morning, I'll try to comply with engaging you as you want, but I got work to do. I can't do this right yet. Now it says, if Tive will redeem you, he may say, I'll take the field and I'll take Ruth. That usually, now notice the word that he uses, if he will redeem you, is yig'al. Yig'al. And ge'ela is usually a term that is used in Leviticus 25:24. It's usually a term that applies mainly to property and land, not people. So we had learned that the union between Boaz and Ruth was a yibum. And we said in the Zohar, volume 2, page 99b, that the dead man leaves a part of his spirit behind on earth and it rests within his wife until she remarries. And indeed, she can't marry anyone, but she has to be redeemed by the brother of her late husband. That's why Boaz is referring to a marriage. He said, if Tive redeems you by marriage, he'll be allowed to redeem the field as well. That's why I said, lie down here. The Gemara Shabbos, page 127b, tells a story of a certain rabbi that lay down with a girl and what people would think of him if he did that. And the same thing is happening here. I know that I'm putting you at risk by asking you to lay down by my side in case anyone thinks anything appropriate is going to happen here. But I need you not to go yet, because we haven't yet got a plan what we're going to do with Tive. Also, when he said lay down next to me, Bogoyle, it also means lay down next to me at a distance. I want you to lay at my feet a few centimeters away. So you'll be at my feet. We're not man and wife. I'm not going to lie with you. You'll stay the night here in this barn and you'll leave early. But we're not, nothing's going to happen now. I'm not going to engage you. We're not going to become permitted to each other now. I want you to stay the night because I can't do anything until tomorrow morning. That's why it says in verse 14, so she lay at his feet until the morning, literally at some distance from his feet, and arose before anyone could recognize his friend. And then he said, listen to these words, let it be known that the woman came to the, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Who's he talking to? Let it not be known that the woman came to the... Who was he talking to? Was he talking to his friends? Was he sending a text message? Who was he saying, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor? Who's he talking to? She's gone. He is alone. Then he says, let it not be known that she came here. Who should keep quiet? The Medrash on Rus Rabba says that Boaz didn't speak to anyone, but these words were a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And he said to Hashem, may it not be known that she came here. Why? I don't want anyone to find out about Rus's visit. And there's good reason behind this. He was afraid to give her anything, as people might say that he had solicited her and paid for her services, especially when that was the common thing to do in those days. So Rus Rabba 5:15 says that Boaz laborers would steal from the piles of grain in order to pay women, which is why he slept on that pile of grain to stop people looting it. It was that bad. So Boaz noticed that Rus got up to leave before daybreak at a time when she would be difficult to identify. And he expressed the hope to Hashem that no one would ever know of her visit and she would not suffer any embarrassment if he were to give her a measure of barley, since no one would ever suspect that she took it as payment. He also said, the Medrash says that his full tefillah is recorded in the Medrash. He said, Rabbeinu Shalolam, Master of the Universe, it is known and revealed before you that I refrained from touching her at all. She grabbed my ankle, I didn't touch anything off her. May it be your will that it not become public knowledge that this woman came here, and let not the name of heaven be desecrated through her. Boaz was genuinely scared that on hearing of Rus's presence, people would be shocked that such a righteous Godel Hador could do such a thing, and it would lead to a Chilul Hashem. The Godel Hador is hanging out with a young girl in the middle of the night. If people would find out, they would think that I might not be righteous, and that would be a Chilul Hashem for Hashem's honor, because I am. So I'm imploring you, says Boaz to God, do it for her sake, and don't let it be known that a woman came here, for she would suffer on account of me. It's my grandeur that would make this a big problem. If it was some lout that she was seeing, what do you think louts do? But I'm the God of the door, and that would desecrate Tyra. So keep it secret. You know nothing happened. So you can see how modest Boaz was. He wasn't at all interested in making it known that he had withstood a massive nisayon, a test, in not touching Rus when she lay close to him. He didn't brag about his gadlus. Besides, he was realizing that asking God for such favors might absolve him of guilt, but tongues would still continue to wag about Rus. They'd argue that although he resisted this temptation because he's such a tzaddik, she nevertheless was pursuing him and found him on the floor in the middle of the night. So he says, even if I'm protected in my righteous state, people still say she's a harlot. Better nobody knows about it for her sake. I'm not worried about me. If people want to wag their tongues about me, that's not what I'm duffing to Hashem for. Protect Ruth's honor. She's a good woman. She's a tzedakus. She's tried her best. There's nothing more she can do. Please at least give her this segula of tznius that this won't happen. That was his tefillah. That's what he said. Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. That was his tefillah to Hashem to protect her name. He had no problem about him losing face himself. When Ruth did come to lie at the feet of Boaz, she was not in any way afraid. She was just following in the footsteps of her illustrious ancestress, whose deed had been solely for the sake of heaven. And Lot, at that time, was not even conscious of the act. He was drunk. Here, both her and Boaz were conscious. They knew what they were doing, and they were behaving impeccably in the given situation. And that is metaken any negativity at all that you could say in the previous incarnations of Yehuda and Lot's daughter. So what was going on was really above board. This is part of the secret of what I want to reveal to you later. We said right at the beginning with Eov, how can you bring purity from impurity? And we said Rus and Boaz, David, Bathsheba, Yehuda, Tamar, Lot and his daughters, all weird. But if you look at what's going on, everything is halachically completely clean. Here's the deal. The purity of the Messiah can only come into the world if what's going on is completely above board. But it needs to be completely above board in the face of a ridiculous test. That's the potency of Mashiach. What's normal is you get married, you have kids, and everything's normal. But that's not a massive test. Why do people get married and have kids? Because they want to get married and have kids. That's normal. Having a woman approach you like this in the middle of the night is very abnormal and very prone to doing a sin. The fact that no sin is done and everyone is working 100% lishma, that's the koyach that can bring the Mashiach. It's the fact that it was dodgy, but was made completely halachically pure, that's the source of the root of the Messiah. Inside the test is exactly the ability to overcome it and bring forth something so much greater. The analogy I use when discussing this in Shiurim to school children and stuff like this is imagine a soldier is given a very dangerous mission, like the Israeli mission opera, where they flew from Israel and bombed the Iranian nuclear plant all those years ago. It was really, really dangerous to do that. They were crossing many enemies' territories to get there, had to deliver a bomb on a nuclear plant and get home safely. That's probably not going to happen. The Entebbe stuff, how they all this stuff is really dangerous, right? The people that come out of that unscathed get medals. Give every soldier a medal. No, but what they've done is ridiculous. They entered a super dangerous situation and came out unscathed. That's amazing. That's the moshel. These two people, Boaz and Ruth, were entering an incredibly dangerous situation of sin. And they both came out unscathed. That gets a medal. The medal of the Messiah. If you get into such a difficult, thorny situation and you behave with impeccable righteousness, that's the proof of the pudding. Of course, that's the kind of behavior which will draw forth the Messiah. That's exactly what all this is about. That's why it has to be a tricky situation. It's got to be a tricky situation so that you can overcome it perfectly and draw forth so much light. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like a honeypot trap that goes wrong. It's some kind of honeypot trap that you give to, I don't know, some kind of spy. And he just is 100%. He, I'm not, everything's great. Wow, he's an amazing agent. Yeah, that's just exactly what's going on here. We're putting Rus and Boaz through unimaginable difficulty in this test. And they both did it with such aplomb that Hashem himself is like, very impressive. I'll draw forth the Messiah from that. And you do that multiple times. Light, Yehuda, Rus, David. And it just keeps working. That's how the chain of the messianic redemption is going to occur. When it's all halachically above board, despite unimaginable pressure of sin. That's why purity is drawn from impurity. If you're pure despite the impurity, that's the koyach for Mashiach. It's overcoming the challenge. That's the secret of what's going on here. And we're going to expand upon that as we go, especially when we're at the end, please God, with David and Bathsheba. We'll see exactly what the deal is. Why that had to happen that way. Rabbi, it's amazing to see you. Thank you so much for giving of your time. Next week, there's just one more point on this verse I'd like to go through. And then we'll get to verse 15, 16, 17, and 18. And of course, we've got to talk about the six omers of barley. This number six is unbelievable. It's to do with the 6 days of creation and what he was alluding to. There's a lot to discuss about it. Because it's lovely, because we're just in the Parsha Bereishis, going into Noach, so it'd been lovely to hit it now. And hopefully we'll understand why he measured out six. What's Boroshis? The first word of the Torah is he created six. He created six. Shis is also a veil in Aramaic. He created a veil. Six, which is the profundity of nature, the natural order, is a veil God hides behind in the world. It's also the veil Tamar covered herself with at the time she met Yehuda. And again, that's coming back to Boaz and Rus. There's a lot to discuss with this concept of six. Notice how many hours Moshe Rabbeinu was late to come down Har Sinai with. Interesting. 6 hours, all these things going. We're going to discuss these hours, the sixth hour. There's lots and lots and lots and lots to discuss. The hours that Moshe Rabbeinu was late. Why was he late? Why did they miscount? The 6 days of Bereishis, the six omers of barley, the six descendants of Messiah that we're going to need to know about. He was alluding to the whole thing when he pulled out these six omers. He says, I'm going to give you these six omers. You are going to be the progenitress of the Messiah. You don't need to worry about a thing. And he's alluding to that with these six omers. This is very profound material. And that will then end the third perek. And then we'll start the last perek and close everything up. See how it all works out in the end. And the whole thing with Ploni Almoni and what he says and how it works. And the removing of the shoe, which we've got to discuss and all that business. Why it was done in those days, etc. And the actual sale transactional bit. And then Rus marrying Boaz and having Oved and Yishai, etc. We'll talk about that. It's wonderful to see you. Have an amazing, amazing week. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you. Any questions? You. All the best. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Kol Tov.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Adrian. Thank
Rabbi,
you so much.
Can I ask you one small question?
Absolutely.
Tov was Boaz's uncle. That means effectively he was. So you're saying he was a younger man? If he was his uncle.
I never said it. Oh, I see. If he was younger, I don't. Yeah, okay. I don't know if he was. Not that he was a younger man. Either which way, she could have gone for a younger man. He may have been older, but her ability to marry anyone, she didn't have to do any of this. Yeah. This whole thing is extra legal because Machlein, he didn't really convert her properly. So she's doing all this out of a chesed. She could marry any beautiful young man.
She's still carrying his soul.
That's right. So she decided that I want to do this Yibam because I want to do a chesed for Machlein.
Right.
Which is amazing. Consider... That's correct. But she chose Boaz over Toiv, which is not, out of the two, the first one you would tell her to go with. But she was saying, no, this man, Naomi has told her, he's the best man for the job.
So Naomi knew between him and Toiv, who was the better
man. Absolutely, and so did Boaz. Look, we don't know much about Toiv, but Boaz, as we've certainly seen in his conversation with her, is saying, I know, he's, with the greatest due respect to Toiv, he's nowhere near holding by what I could do for Machlein, in every way. And there's no way he'd want you if it comes with a feast. He's not interested in you and this spiritual endeavour. But the money of the field, he'll be very interested in. But redeeming a Moabitess and helping her out spiritually, that is not high on his agenda. I'm very up with that. That's something I'm interested in. And clearly, we've got a spiritual mating here, being Yehuda and Lot's daughter, that are both fixing up issues. Clearly, there's a whole... It's a very spiritual... It's a shidduch, which is very unusual. And I'm not going to let go of you. Just don't worry. That was different.
But he resisted.
He resisted, but that was different. That was different. That was a seduction which didn't work out. But even though he resisted, he didn't fully resist. So there's a problem there. But in that particular case, that's not one of these things which is mentioned. He was a tzaddik because he resisted. But that was a pure test which he had to stand up to, which he did. Here we've got a situation where a situation is cropping up which is intrinsically halachically dangerous. What's the best halachic course out of it? A kosher yibum. Kadas and kadin in the eyes of the law. Wait, let's do it like that. Problem is, if you're going to go legal, there's a legal challenger. And we'll do it through the court processes, which is exactly what they did. They went to court, found Toiv. He relinquished, everyone signed contracts, he got married to her. It was mummish by the book. Have an amazing week.